whole idea is to integrate the oxygen, the meta, the oxygen and everything you need to be at your best as you work, not after you work.
Welcome back to Tech Less, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everybody, to Tech Less. I'm here today with Guillaume Biat.
Yeah, you got it.
And yes, I got it. And he is the creator of Strategic Narrative, the business strategy consulting and coaching methodology for entrepreneurial leaders of professional services firms.
Mm-hmm.
Through his company, MetaHelm, he serves experts, CEOs, and leadership teams to build a successful business they also love by growing narrative power, the leadership ability to defy the normal when the normal is wrong. I love that. What attracted me to you, Guillaume, initially was your thought leadership around growing a personal brand authentically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whether our listener is a business owner, a team member, manager, or individual contributor, I believe that your strategies and your structures can help them make progress where it's meaningful to them. Welcome.
Thank you, April. It's a pleasure. Yeah, I love how, well, you read a bit of my, what people will see on my website, my bio, but I love how you're especially the way you interpreted the intonation, you accentuated the most important keywords. You know, to me, it's the work I do is about humanity, it's about love, it's about creating something meaningful for yourself and for your team and the people you serve. But it's also about making money. It's also about having, you know, I define what I do as helping people build. Lately, I've called this build a soulful firm. And a soulful firm is a firm that is viable, sustainable. And so if it's a business, you need to make money. I think it's very, very important. So in your description of what I do is absolutely right. It's like a successful firm, meaning a successful in like financially successful, but also a firm that you love because you feel like you can come as you are, you know, being whole and being here to have, to create possibilities, you know, to bring your creative energy, to build something cool, have fun. Yeah. Voila. But my career didn't start exactly like that. That's that it grew like this over time. I've been in consulting we were chatting about this, you know, a bit before you hit record. I've been in consulting for 32 years. My first consulting engagements was in 1992 as I was a student. Why are you laughing?
I love this because I was born in 1993.
Hey. So yeah, you were born and I was consulting.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so how, I mean, because I've seen on your LinkedIn where you've started to talk about soulful work, what has that transition look like, or that evolution in how you think about work and how you think about business? What does that look like for you over the last 30 years?
Over the last 30 years? How much time do we have in your podcast? Well, you know, first of all, it's weird. You might think it's weird, but I always wanted to be a consultant. I knew that's what I wanted to do. My dad's a doctor, and everyone in my family is an entrepreneur, or my aunts and uncles, they all had some kind of small business going. Some of them running bigger businesses too. And I tried to, you know, be interested in medicine because my dad was exposing me, and then I can't stand the blood or that. So I'm like, what could I do? So I came up with this idea that I would mix being a doctor for businesses. So like, and I had didn't know how it's called. And then someone say, oh, I think it's called something like consulting. Like, what's that? Okay, yeah, that sounds cool. So I want to do that. But initially, I had no idea what I was doing, April. I was, and I messed, I, you know, when you start doing something, you kind of mess up a lot of, it's not very good, right? So to have clear conscience, I went to business school, and what I went to two of them undergraduate too, and what they did is that they opened the doors to big firms, because you know I was labeled as somebody who could be a good junior consultant, and so I went to these large firms, and back in the 90s there was very little room for humanity in those consulting firms. It was just the time where the leaders of those firms would start to think about this. And in fact, I noticed in the market as I was job hunting that some firms were starting to differentiate by saying, "Hey, not only we are a great consulting firm, but also you don't have to travel as much. You can also have a family life." So that was a very compelling value proposition. So I come from this era, April, and now we're in 2024, and we can work from home. You can, you know, you can really integrate your personal life and your work life and your social life and every aspect of your life. I think a lot easier. I know that's a very general statement. I'm generalizing here. It might not be the case, but overall, I feel like there are so many more possibilities to do it. So your question is, you know, how has this morphed? I was very interested in this value proposition in this new kind of consulting. I played the kind of the game of the big firms in the first 5 to 6 years of my career very successfully, but I burnt out. There was one evening in Paris where, you know, I got out of the restaurant and I fainted on the sidewalk, and my colleague's like, "What's going on?" And I was just like completely drained. Because I was traveling so much in Europe, I was based in Paris. My elderly neighbor on the fifth floor of my apartment building once, you know, we ran into each other into the elevator. And in Paris, a lot of elevators are very small, so two people, and she looks at me, and I'm all, you know, dressed in my suit and tie with my little carry-on, and she looks at me and she goes, "You're so lucky to be a flight attendant. You must see so many great destinations." Because she had heard me, you know, come and go all the time, and she imagined that I must be a flight attendant. So then I realized, well, this is great, but this is not me. I'm feeling like it's not me. I don't know how to explain it, but my soul is, I have an intuition I should do something else, but I still want to be a consultant. How do I do this? Right? So I kind of derail my own path. I like to do that. I derail my own path proactively. I don't wait for people to derail it. And I went on to start. I had already started two startups. They were tech startup. One was a purchasing, you call it like a digital marketplace. The second one was a digital content management organization. I didn't start it myself. I joined the founding team, you know, as a co-founder. And then the third one I actually started from scratch with two other business partners, and that was all about human relationships in the workplace. You know, focusing on things like, you know, peer-to-peer relationships, productivity, and so on. So that's kind of the where I come from and why I'm so passionate about what I do now.
Wow. There's something that you said about feeling like something in your soul or in your intuition was speaking to you. I'm not going to say I've had a similar experience because I don't know what you've lived through, but I've had my own moments of,
Yeah, that resonated.
it resonates with me. I've had my own moments of feeling like, on paper, I should be feeling fulfilled, or on paper, I should be happy, but in fact, I haven't found a sense of joy. Which I'm not sure if that's exactly what you were describing, but just this moment of thinking, is this really what I'm meant to be doing at this time in my life? Goodness. So you went on working, consulting in like human factors or peer-to-peer relationships. I'm curious with your strategic narrative and your narrative power. And I've watched a few of your videos from your website of what that looks like and aligning teams in one direction towards a goal. I see a lot in my work where there are silos across the organization. I think particularly in professional services, you know, and at least with me and probably most of our listeners, we're in the technology realm. And so often we're focused on solving technology issues, and we might not be looking at people issues or process issues, which we know are very critical in trying to implement technology. So I'm curious, what organizational challenges have you come across, and how the strategic narrative can help with those types of challenges as we look at implementing technology projects?
That's a very good question, because that's really why strategic narrative, which is the name of my methodology, exists. I came across all the issues you described, the silos, the misalignments, the stuck projects, the difficulty to change. Because I started in technology, right? My first of you know, one of my first official jobs with Air France, and we implemented a website in 1994. The web. This was incredible. But anyways, and then I worked with EDS. I was an SAP consultant, the content digitization, and so on. There was one day in 2001, I was brought on by a large energy organization called Total in France, to oil and gas and big energy company. I think is at the time was probably number two or three in the world. And as my late 20s, and they had heard about my company, through connections, and I had this very specific knowledge on how to make how to digitize content for purchasing departments. And they say, hey, we would like to have Guillaume come and do a project with us because our project is not moving forward very well. And so I we give the statement of work, green light. I start scheduling meetings, and it's with the head of procurement and his team. So he's like number two or number three in this company. And I show up. So long story short, I show up and I kick off this project. And it's like at the top of the tower in La Défense, the financial district. It's very, very intimidating. I mean, this big boardroom, and with all the engineers, and they, I see that at the end of the boardroom, table, like this table is like maybe, I don't know, 40 feet long, huge. And it's like,
My goodness.
everyone's sitting around is looking at me like, okay. And I am feeling the pressure. In 30 minutes, so I start with my I had prepped, my slides, and I do the kickoff, and this is what I think we should do, blah blah blah. And then 30 minutes into the meeting, I realize this is not gonna work. Like my intuition again tells me something is not clicking here. No one's really listening to each other. They're speaking different language. You can see all the typical corporate plays, like some people want to, show up as they're the smartest guy in the room, or girl, or people pretend they understand, but they have no clue what the jargon means and all of that. And I derailed the meeting. I said, I'm so sorry to, I think we're going to change plan. I have a feeling like this is the problem is somewhere else. And I said, do you mind if we all close our laptops here And if we pick a piece of paper and a pen, and at the time people were still taking a pen and paper notes.
Yes.
These days is different.
Hey, I still have my notebook.
Good. Oh,
I
great.
take notes online, but this is my brainstorming
Good. Welcome to this old school club.
power.
And I said, do you mind if you can grab a piece of paper and a pen? I would like you to draw each of you to take a minute or two of silence and draw the project. And so they look at me with googly eyes, like, what's that? Is this some sort of, team building exercise or icebreaker? And they did. And then they look at me like, what do we do with the drawing now? It's like, well, let's all put them on the there's like a cloth, wall, and we with little pins, and so we put all the drawings. And I say, well, let's do a gallery walk. Let's look at those drawings and see and discuss what we see. And it's something I had done with another group before, but I was not sure this would work with this one. It was very risky, right? And they walked, and I almost didn't have anything to say. They all looked at these drawings and they're like, well, none of these drawings have anything, none of these correspond to, they're all different. That's what I mean. We cannot see any similarities in any of these drawings. So I'm like, yeah, I think visually you're seeing what I was sensing, which is you guys are not on the same boat here. You're not on the same ship. So it would be like you're trying to build a bridge, but everybody has a different idea and a different blueprint for the bridge. Of course, it's not going to work, and your project is not going to. So I knew from that moment that what the most important thing was this idea of alignment. So what we did, they were not on the same narrative. They didn't have the same language. They didn't have this, no overlap about their mindset, and not the same process. These are the three characteristics of what a narrative is. I like to use the story to kind of maybe share with our audience here what I define by a narrative is really those three layers. Most people think a narrative is just what you say verbally. Oh, let's tell a great story. But a lot of the time, the way we behave and we act tells a much stronger story. Like you come into a room and you can see and hear and feel the narrative without anyone saying anything, right? And the third piece is so what do you do, what do you say, but also your mindset. It starts in your mind. So with this team, I just spend the following 6 months addressing their tech issues. So we did, review their information protocols and talk to suppliers, but also I really, really worked on with them on defining things and how. What's in it for the company, but what's in it for all the suppliers who are trying to onboard on this platform? It down to the mindset. So we had opportunities to have lunch together, talk about who we are, what we do here, and really share more openly what we were excited about for this project or not. And some people were clearly not motivated or interested in this project, but they had to be there. So we're like, okay, we're on the same boat. Like, how do we cope with that? And the project was ended up being successful. And what I learned at the end of the project is that they had fired two other big firm, big one, big companies, big consulting firms, because they were not able to get these guys to work together. And they came to me, it's like, oh, Guillaume, we want to tell you something. You're the first one that has managed to have us work as one team, and therefore and so that has hugely contributed to the success. So the story is not about me being the hero. The story is about, because that was a team effort, and it was my first time working this way. And I probably didn't do that very well, but I tried something new. And that's the very first time I had a clear demonstration that when you include really the deepest element of human connections and storytelling and narrative building into a team, you can just do anything. You can do so much more. So that's why I created this methodology, and that's why I really believe that, it's by connecting the dots that we can move forward. And that's a IT and tech project, but I feel like why this work matters is because as a society and even with humanities, we are more and more, confronted with huge challenge, huge adaptive changes for which, by definition, we don't have the answers. We don't know. Climate is changing, obviously. Right? There's something going on. Like we were trying to do this and do that, but we don't have anybody has a for sure plan about this? Because I don't. Right?
I don't think so.
So
If they
it's
do, let me know.
right. So if you look at our species, and there's there's a book called Sapiens, I'm trying to remember the name of the author, and it just slipped out of my tongue. So we'll put that in the show notes as saying podcast work. If you read Sapiens, the author explains very clearly why, as a species, we were able to survive compared to other species. It's because we have a unique ability to imagine stuff, to create our own movies in our mind, and which is we create our own narratives, right? We believe in things that don't exist, and that's why we survive. That's why in small group of people, we're able to achieve the unachievable, what we thought was unachievable. But that's where religions come from. Religions are myth, right? They're the Greek mythology. It's myth. They're stories, but we're not quite sure if they really existed. They're probably far-fetched or stretched, but yet we love to believe in those stories because those stories help us carry on, have hope, get together, align, agree or disagree, build value systems, and so on. And so if we have these disabilities, it's for a reason, right? So my whole perspective is based on the fact that if we want to achieve greater things together, why don't we use more of that power, which I call narrative power, the leadership ability to defy the normal when the normal is wrong. It's basically your ability to carry through change, whether that change, that thing that is wrong is a collective or organizational or personal. Maybe there's a ton of things wrong with me, April. I'll tell you, there are a ton of things wrong, and I forge my narrative day after day, and to take on those things, and hopefully I can take on a few before I die. That's how I came up with this definition of narrative power. Narrative power does also creates other things. And then I'll pause because you may have other questions. So, but I'll pause here. How about that?
No, that's really helpful. And I love that
Was
you
this story
explained.
helpful? Was this
Yes, yes, yes,
okay? Cool.
yeah. Well, I'm just connecting lots of my own stories with this large issue of misalignment, and also bringing in that human element of like we each have something that contributes to the overall narrative versus it being, top-down driven, or just
Yeah.
driven in a different way.
Right.
But as you were sharing all of this, a question kept popping up in my mind is, what does this look like when we're dealing with remote teams? Because the story that you shared was like everybody was in person.
Right, correct.
And so often now, I think most of my career, I've worked remotely. And so I'm always curious. I think a lot of our listeners are working remotely and dealing with these challenges remotely. But when we're not in the same place, additional challenges come up of like how to build that trust, how to build that rapport, how to make that time. What have you seen in your work that might could speak to that?
I also see a lot of new possibilities, April. I actually see more possibilities and positive possibilities than challenging before. And in fact, I was seeing those possibilities before COVID, And in when I launched Meta Helm, my current, coaching and consulting business in 2016. And in 2018, I told all my clients, that's it, no more in person. It's all online. I'm using this new thing called Zoom. Have you heard? No, what's that? Are you sure? And I was frightened. I thought, I think I'm going to lose a lot of clients. And actually, the transition was very good, very, very helpful for one. So what are the possibilities that I saw then is like, and I think we have now, you can work pretty much anywhere from anywhere, anytime with anyone you want. So I think we should be grateful for that. Okay, so if you started working in that world and you take this for granted, celebrate it. Because I think it's really unique. It's a unique ability that our society has, is to be able to go reach, the hearts and the minds of people you would not normally or before, from the life before. So I think that's the number one possibility. The other thing is being able to diversify our means of communication. When you send an email or when you send like a direct message on a social media platform or text, you have a whole variety of ways to interact with people. Or maybe you're using Slack, or there are tons of those platforms now. Now the flip side, because you started with challenge, is that you have to really understand how these channels work and for what purpose. What mode of thinking do you need at what time? And these are principles of metacognition. I'll get into this in a moment, but what do you need to accomplish? So therefore, which tool do you need? So that might be one of the challenges. But another possibility is that you can really diversify. Now you can, even in an in-person event, I remember going to a conference around 2015 or 16, and they had this big screen on the side that was projecting the Twitter feed of the conference. And so people could post their questions during the conference for someone who's not comfortable raising their hand and voicing, but that still has a very good question, a very important point. It was an enabler. It's a huge enabler. So I see that in our for narrative building, we have now the so many other possibilities to really listen to everyone, people who would, typically feel a bit, rejected or alienated. Very, very important if we want to build a more human and soulful organization is to go reach out to these people. That's where purpose comes from. I love that the fact that you said, it's a very fun time. It's like it's top down. Yeah, hey, the CEO and his team has crafted a great story. We're all gonna say the same. That's a recipe for disaster, right? There is an organization. It's a group of people. Sure, you have a title and you're at the top of the pyramid, but when you look at the pyramid from above, to me, it looks more like a tree. It looks more like a system, like a network of distributed, nodes and people. So narrative power comes from very unexpected places, and technology these days and remote work has this, I think, this forcing function that can potentially help us get into areas that are least expected, in my opinion. Right? These are some of the possibilities that I see. And yeah, there are challenges. Like you're not in the same room, so maybe it does require to find a better way to balance or integrate, our modes of work, and say, okay, maybe once a month we should get in the same room. It's not the same energy, it's not the same vibe, right? We are also very sensorial animals, so we smell people before we say anything. Did you know that?
I did not.
Look it up, and when you get in a room, you may not consciously notice bad or good smells, but your brain is immediately going after the smell first. So
Wow.
there's a reason why we say, we talk about a situation and we say, oh, that doesn't smell good.
Yeah.
In our language, we say this because innately, that's how we're born. And when we're babies, we can't talk, but we recognize smells before we can communicate or understand any verbal communication, right? And we keep this for the rest of our life. And so maybe I'm sounding like I'm digressing, so let me go back and close the loop here. You asked me, you know, what are the challenges of remote work? We can't smell.
Period.
Our listener are like,
I'm so
I'm
excited to look
sorry.
this up, though.
I am unsub. Thanks, Guillaume, for coming to my podcast. Everyone subscribed. No, but I mean, you see what I mean? It's like you don't have that. You don't have the handshake or the hug or the, if you don't like to touch people, you see them in 3D, and you have this, all your senses are activated. So for sure, yeah, we don't have that when yet. Maybe somebody is inventing a technology that is working on this, but I don't have it yet. So
Mouth through the Zoom.
yeah, but overall, I April, I see a lot more possibilities and than before. I'm part of a number of groups that meets. We have no agenda meetings. Maybe that's a piece of that's a tip maybe for your team or your organization. Do you guys have non-agenda meetings?
No, we are very like I would say agenda driven. Granted, there are some where like we try just to shoot the shit for the first 3 to 5 minutes. Just because it's like if we were in person, we would check in how we're doing as humans. That's something that I've overcome, I think, in the last year or so as a project manager. I used to really just want to get down to business. Like what's the agenda? What are our desired outcomes? All of the things. And then I kind of took a step back of like, we're humans. Like this is, yes, this is business. Yes, we need to make progress here, but we make progress when we have relationships with people that we can trust and that we can be vulnerable with, and how can we foster that? Let's talk about things that really matter to us outside of work and check in with each other. But I think that goes against the norm of what I've at least experienced myself, particularly when it's a remote environment.
I hear you. I see that. I recognize that. Like, so much of our business world is, command and control, and we want guarantees and we want certainties that things will be shipped at the right time based on the right specs and so on. So we tend to swap our humanity for these mechanism, but it's without realizing that yeah, we still need to breathe, we still need serendipity, or we still need to listen to our intuition, to work together. So
So
maybe test like a no agenda meeting, like what happens, maybe just with one prompt.
yeah, tell me more about this. What's how does
So
that work?
so I'll give you a concrete example. I'm part of this group called the School of the Possible, founded by a guy called Dave Gray. So if you don't know Dave Gray, look him up. He is the founder of a firm called Explain in Portland, Oregon, has written a few books about different ways to think. And the School of the Possible is a concept and a project he's working on right now. And there is an event in the School of the Possible called the Campfire. And we meet every Friday from 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Pacific. And that's a no agenda meeting. And that meeting, every time I go there, that meeting is so rich. We get so much done. It's just incredible. And the only prompt that Dave has to lead the meeting is, what's fueling your creativity? That's it. That's it. And then he does breakout rooms. I was so thrilled by the, to see that, you know, this by this model that I started implementing some of that model for my group program, the MetaHelm Change Makers, and showing up with less predictable things to do, you know, more like leaving more room, a blank slate or an open space for ideas to emerge and connections to grow or tensions to get released, to be released. You know, you need space for tensions to release. And it has brought so much value that group in my group program, I said to people, so is that valuable? And they're like, yeah, they will not miss a meeting unless they have like a trip or something, but they will show up just for that because I was able to create that non-agenda space that creates buoyancy in their busy life. I work with entrepreneurs, so you know, but you consulting, and even if you're an employee, you're still super busy, and you know, the demands are really, really high. There's a lot of pressure. You need that room, that room for, hey, can we just let our mind wander around? So, just a thought.
Oh no, I love this. I think
But
we
is
could
that,
benefit from this immediately next week.
is that, is that, is it is it ruffing your project manager's feathers?
No, I mean, I think
Going against the
that
grain, or
I think on one side it does, and on the other side, I would say maybe the last year I've really started to explore this concept of doing less and how it's a concept that I first learned about from Kate Northrup. She wrote a book about doing less and how you can actually end up achieving more and finding like a greater sense of fulfillment by doing less, by aligning your energies with your activities. And I think particularly with the team I'm thinking of in my current work, I mean, we're all consultants. There are a lot of high demands, and just taking the time to say, like, look at each other in the face. And either I don't know if the creativity prompt would work for this group or not.
you can come up with another one.
Yeah, we come up with a different
Contextual.
prompt, and like, because like we're constantly dealing with process issues, and people issues, and I know there's a lot of tension, and we've got multiple different cultures and time zones, and all of the great ingredients to a recipe of misalignment. And so, yeah, I love this idea of having something to kind of keep us buoyant, which is that space.
Right.
So no, it doesn't. Like it ruffles feathers on one area, but I love the sense of possibility on the other side of that.
And I want to make two comments here. First of all, it's interesting you say you're trying to do less because I'm trying to do more. But let me explain. I think we're talking about the same thing. But maybe I see this differently. I'm honestly, I'll be very, you know, super transparent. I'm trying to achieve more, to do more with less stress, less chaos, less frustration. I see what I mean.
Oh
So
yeah.
I don't know. You said her name is
Kate Northrup.
Kate. So I don't know.
Kate Northrup.
I don't know Kate Nurse from book. And I get it. It's like doing less. Maybe it's like doing less useless things or toxic things, negative things. Maybe that's what the book is about, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say you probably could sum it up with like the 80-20 rule. I
Okay.
think it's more about understanding what your values are, what your objectives are, and your objectives could be really high and lofty, you know, whatever they might be. But instead of doing 100 things from the task list, do the things that number one, are in your zone of genius, are really things that light you up, that you excel at.
Okay.
And number two, do the things that are going to help you see those results. And then number three, do it in a time frame that works for your body. So she talks a lot about like women's menstrual cycles and energy levels. And a lot of us humans, we don't exist on infinite energy levels. And so mapping out all of those components to align within reason, because we know it's, we all operate under constraints. But yeah, it's this concept, right, of like how do we achieve more with less, either less effort, less stress.
And be in sounding like in your brief summary here is like align with who you are, you're recognizing your capacity, your capabilities, your capacity, and so on. Okay, so we very much think the same. I was gonna make another comment and then I forgot. Sorry.
Maybe it will come back to you.
Maybe we let it re-emerge from this non-agenda conversation.
Although I do have an agenda item question for you.
Okay. All right. The project manager is on now. This podcast. Bring it on.
I've seen you write some posts recently on LinkedIn, and I'm registered for your workshop on your take on productivity. And I think this aligns with exactly what we were just talking about. Can you give us a little bit of a teaser for your workshop and a little bit of a teaser for your work you're doing with productivity and having a healthy flow?
So I call healthy productivity the practice of looking at your work as an opportunity to be joyful, I would say. And I look at healthy productivity as a practice of integration versus balance. You know, in our common narrative, in our society, we say, oh, work-life balance. But I feel like really, as human beings, we are designed as integrated systems. So my theory and my approach on healthy productivity is that your work, your personal life, everything, your creative life, your affective life, emotional, anything is should could be integrated. So instead of jumping on more work and thinking about being more productive from the standpoint of growing your capacity, for instance, I have two kids, 16 and 13, and sometime they go to bed. I'm like, ah, they're in bed. Okay, we had a great family night. Ooh, it's 10 p.m. I could work another 10 hours and nail that thing I really wanted to do, and I promised to a client today. So I'm going to extend my capacity. That's my original narrative from 1992 when I started in consulting. It was really well formatted by all those big firms who told me that I should work and work more to be successful and become a partner and have no life. That's where it comes from. That's where it comes from. But now I have a new narrative. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go to bed because I need to sleep and I want to be in my cozy bed with my wife, and I want to be wake up in the morning and be ready for the next day because I have very important people to meet, myself and my clients, and I want to give them my best, right? So my approach on healthy productivity is there is a way to, instead of growing the capacity, you can actually improve the flow. And the metaphor I use is, have you ever tried to empty a bottle of water as quickly as possible?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
So
I'm
what
sure I've
happened?
done it the wrong way. I just try
I
to
don't know.
squeeze it and like shove it all out really fast.
Really, really fast. And the liquid inside is all like chaotic. And so the metaphor, let's assume it's a glass bottle. So you can't squeeze it, okay? To be fair. So the glass bottle represents your boundaries, your capacity. You can't expand it. You know, the bottleneck is what it is. You can't grow it. The water inside represents the flow of your energy flow, your life, right? So so let's say the bottle is full and you tip it upside down, what do you see? you see water and air kind of trying to go through the bottleneck, and it's kind of chaotic because there isn't, at some point, there is not enough air, so a big bubble goes up and then more water, and it splashes, it's a mess. So you can't, but you can't grow the capacity. So what happens is the next solution is that you could take that bottle. Maybe I'll let you guess first. What do you think is the solution to increasing the flow?
Okay, so I have a bottle here in front of me, and
Right.
I've totally done this before when I'm trying to empty like a wine bottle out into the to the sink, trying to just like boom, 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 and
Yeah,
it just
right. You're
doesn't work.
so you're
But
shaking it.
yeah, but sometimes if I turn it a little bit on its side, then the water just flows out really nicely, and poof, it's empty.
Right. The problem is that we live in at a time where we probably expect a speed from you. So you can't really let the water flow. But you're on the right track, because if you tilt the bottle, what happens is that you're starting seeing the flow of water coming out, and then some air at the same time. Right? So the flow is a lot smoother, but you need more
Smoother.
gravity to go faster.
Yeah,
Remember,
because it's still slow. It's still
it's
kind of
a little
slow.
too slow. I mean, yeah, sure, you can just be on your own time and just take 3 years to complete a 1 hour task.
Okay,
But
I'm dying. Tell me, is it
yeah,
a straw? How do we get this water out
with
fast?
a straw, exactly. That's the answer right there. That's the answer.
Really?
You put a straw. You put a straw in the and you blow on it to create to get it started. And as the water goes down, the straw, pops at the top, which is the bottom of the water. And then that's the fastest way to empty a bottle of water. There is a middle solution, which consists of shaking the bottle in circular motion so that it creates a vortex.
Oh, goodness.
You could do that. You try, and it actually, so the whole idea, go now, let's go back to let's step out of the metaphor. The whole idea is to integrate the oxygen, the oxygen and everything you need to be at your best as you work, not after you work. So many people think, I'm gonna work as hard as I can for so many years and then I'll rest, right? Why can't we approach all our tasks like today I was processing expenses? It's kind of boring, right? It's kind of meh. Do I want to do that? No. But I reset my energy before. I planned this task for a specific time. I pulled what I call my checklist. I know exactly what to do. So all of these little things are really calming to me, and I got it done with joy. In the flow, as it could have, I turned off the notification on my phone. So what if we started to look at, and that's where I think there's a lot of overlap with Kate's theory and book. It's really about increasing the flow. All right, long answer. That's what we're going to do in the workshop. It's called Healthy Productivity. Keep calm and find your flow. Voila.
I want to find my flow. Vamos, let's do it.
I'm gonna share techniques and strategies. First of all, I like to talk. I will talk about the mindset, and I will show a video where we will see the bottle spin, and I'll demonstrate the difference. Hopefully, they will turn on a light bulb for people. But then I'll share a bunch of strategy tips, techniques. I share with entrepreneurs, but as you know, April, it applies to everyone. They're just
Yeah,
such good human techniques.
truly. Oh, I'm so excited for this workshop.
They're
I
coming.
think it's
You signed up, right?
I will be there. I'm signed up.
Okay, cool.
Yes, yeah. And I just think particularly with your background in consulting that this could extend so much further beyond entrepreneurs, and it could be very helpful for anyone. And I mean, frankly, anyone, but I'm thinking particularly consulting, professional services.
I think you're right. I think you're right. This, The strategic narrative methodology was I designed it for at first. I'm like, I'm designing it this for everyone, and I was at the time working with fairly large organizations, at least a few thousand people. And then it turns out that because I'm an entrepreneur at heart, my soul guided me towards entrepreneurs, and I decided to specialize. When you specialize in a specific problem, you get better at it more quickly. But that's why it's framed as such. But the principles are just universal for everyone.
I'm so excited for this workshop. Fantastic. And if people want to learn more about your work, learn more about this workshop, where can they find you?
Well, my website is called MetaHelm, MetaHelm. It goes for guiding the guides. MetaHelm.com. Yeah, there is information there. I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn. You mentioned LinkedIn before. And YouTube as well. I have a YouTube channel with videos that I post almost every day.
Brilliant. So I've told you before that I first found out about you from Joe and Carly's podcast,
Right.
and I've copy and pasted there, like, what's your favorite quote? Because I really like that question and I love my own quotes. And I think I remember that you struggled with this question.
Yeah, but I learned my lesson, so now I have a cheat sheet.
You're prepared
I
now.
am prepared. Bring it on, because I'm a quote hoarder, so I have I use Evernote. And I have a note in there with my, that I call my favorite quote. So my favorite quotes, sorry. So do you want to ask me the question? And then I'll pretend I didn't know.
Guillaume, what is your favorite quote?
Oh, wow. I had no idea you would ask this question. What a great question. Let me think for a second. Here, I'll pick that's my latest favorite quote from it's somebody called Thomas Henry Huxley. I think he died a long time ago. Anyways, perhaps the most valuable result of all education is the ability to make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done, whether you like it or not. Doesn't sound very sexy, but to me it's my favorite quote because I think it summarizes pretty much life. We all have our dreams and things we know we that are ought to be done, and somehow our body, heart, minds, legs, hands keep doing all sorts of stuff. We're like, why are you guys doing this? This was not the plan. The
That's why I made
plan.
that face, because I'm like, I need this quote in my life. I need more help with my discipline and doing things I don't want to do.
Really wanted to do what I don't know. What's on your bucket list? Like pick something on your bucket list.
I mean, I would have loved to have gone to the beach today. Like, let's just take something small.
Okay. But do you, what th something you know you have to do
Oh, something I know I have to do. Clean my
on your
cat
back
litter.
on your back on your bucket list, something you have to do on your bucket list.
Oh, something I have. So something exciting that I like, that's on my bucket list.
You sure? Yeah.
That I have to do.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, before I die, I really have to go to this city or this place. You really have to.
Okay. So I'm gonna take a wild guess and say my dad probably won't be listening to this podcast anytime soon.
That's
Shout out
the best way.
to
The best way for him to know.
But something that's on my bucket list is like he's such a great spontaneous surpriser. And really treated us as kids to like wonderful experiences with travel. And he's never been to Italy. And when I went to Italy, I just saw my dad everywhere. He's like larger than life personality. He's got like the Italian flair going on. And so something that's on my bucket list is to surprise him with a trip to Italy and just say like, "Hey, Pop, pack a bag. You don't know where we're going. Like, I'm gonna come pick you up and have everything be a big surprise for him." That's on the list.
So, okay, so what's getting in the way?
Me prioritizing it.
So I'll leave you with that. But the quote here says, make yourself do the thing you have to do when it ought to be done. So it refers to the fact that life is not infinite, you know. We will all go at some point and infinite, and then whether you like it or not. Whether you like, so there's probably, you know, there's this other quote that I love by, so you'll get two favorite quotes for the price of one. Brad Yates says, let's see if I memorize this one because I don't have it on my cheat sheet. He says, the extent to which we say we want something is often the extent to which we resist doing this thing. It's interesting, you know, the interaction between, again, in our narrative, between our words and our action. Sometimes we say we want, it is to express that we fear doing it. There's something that, you know, we fear. Maybe, you know, I can't read your mind or heart, April, but maybe you fear letting go of, you know, some work responsibilities, or you fear spending money, or you fear, you know, taking time off, or I don't know. There's somewhere, maybe something there. So.
No, this concept of the things we say we want and the things we feel the most resistance
Right.
100% resonates with me.
Okay.
100%. It's almost validating
Oh, okay. I'm not the one. I'm not the only one who felt that. Yeah. All right. We had fun today.
We had so much fun.
That was
Thank you
great.
so much.
I love the vibe that you bring in your I know you're starting this podcast. I've been on 60 plus podcasts for the last 2.5 years. I love the vibe, the humanity and the energy and the laughter and the moments that you create here. So thank you so much. Thank you for putting this podcast together for those who will listen to it and for having me.
Thank you. That means so much to me. I feel like little tears here. This is just so fun. Like one of my goals for this podcast was just to create connection. And if nothing else comes from it, I've created connection with four people now, yourself included. So I just appreciate you being here and sharing your insights. So thank you.